Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to episode 44 of Global Leader Radio. And they said it wouldn't last past the second episode, Kevin.
I can't believe that. We're getting close to 50.
Can you believe it? Wow.
We'll have to do something special for that one.
Exactly right. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. We achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways, including resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests. And we've got a great one today. And because as today, we welcome Yelena Ipova to Global Leader Radio. She is a partner in charge of Beef, Arigetti, and Wins Tax Group and the International Services Practice. She specializes in advising domestic and international companies on international tax issues and tax planning strategies regarding inbound and outbound operations. She also assists clients with domestic tax issues by providing tax planning and compliance services. So Yelena is an active member in many professional organizations, and she's a founding board member of Global Exec Women, vice chair of the Georgia Council for International Visitors Board, and chair of the 2013 Counselor Ball. But you're pretty busy. Wow.
I stay pretty busy.
Yeah. Yeah. She's also treasurer of the Georgia District Export Council. Yelena has written for numerous publications and is a regular contributing writer to Global Atlanta on international tax issues. So prior moving to Atlanta, Ms. Ipova received her master's degree in engineering from the Technological College of Leningrad. Upon her arrival in the United States, she continued her education in accountancy at Georgia State University. And she was recently selected by Atlanta-based Global Exec Women as one of the three finalists for the International Women of Influence Awards in the category of Service Providing Businesses. So Ms. Ipova was also selected by the Atlanta Business Chronicle as one of the city's up-and-comers for 2006, and she was most recently recognized by Atlanta Magazine as one of the 55 most influential foreign-born Atlantans. So welcome to Global Leader Radio, Yelena. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for the introduction. You know, when I hear about myself, it sounds sort of a little boring because I'm like, oh, my God, this must be such a boring life. Chair of this, treasurer of that. But there's much more to my life than that.
Oh, absolutely. And I know you make tax exciting. I know you have to, right?
I don't have to. It's exciting to
begin
with.
It's exciting to begin with, especially something you got to have. And it's one of the two or three things that are just supposedly the things that you have to have in life, death and taxes, right?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. So to begin with, please tell us a little bit about yourself, starting with your original birthplace and where you originally called home, and a bit about your work experience, and take us up to the present.
Well, I came from actually from a country that doesn't exist anymore and from a city that changed its name as well. I'm originally from Soviet Union, Leningrad. Mm-hmm. Now it's St. Petersburg, Russia.
Yes.
So It's a little odd to me that the names have changed. And I mean, not just the names. There are so many things that changed. But I came in the U.S., to the U.S., to Atlanta mm-hmm. in 1990. And it was through Jewish immigration. At that time, Russian government opened the border for Jews to leave. Mm-hmm. And it was one good time to be a Jewish in Russia. Everybody wanted to be.
Because that was the way out, right?
That was the way out. So I just finished college there and already managed to get married mm-hmm. in college. And my husband and I left. And we had to go through sort of 4 months of living in Europe. I know it sounds very exciting, living in Europe for 4 months, but it was a little different at that time. It was more just going through, going through immigration process. And we were in Austria, and then we were in Italy, and we were supported by Jewish Federation from the United States.
Okay.
We left the country with 100 $20 per person, I think. That's all we could take. So that's how we left Russia or Soviet Union at that time. And we were interviewed in American Embassy in Italy. They wanted to make sure we're not spies. Mm. So that took a while for them to really put the stamp of approval on us. So
4 months is a long time.
It was very, at that time, there were a lot of people waiting for their visas to the U.S.
Okay.
So I don't even know how many of us were there. So it was a long line of people, let's put it this way.
Okay.
And definitely it wasn't the best way to visit Europe because we had no money and we were very nervous and we didn't know what was going to happen to us. And, you know, the future was very...
uncertain.
Very vague. Very uncertain at that point. So, and the reason we came to Atlanta and not any other places in the U.S. is because my uncle was here. He immigrated 10 years before. And when he left, after that time, they closed the border.
Wow.
And for me, it wasn't a big deal. I was just a child. But for my mom, who wanted to leave, it was a big deal. It was her brother. She hasn't seen him for 10 years. My grandmother hasn't seen her son for 10 years.
Yeah.
We couldn't travel anywhere. We had that sort of stamp on our foreheads, you know, that we shouldn't be like allowed to be anywhere in case we decide not to come back.
Mm.
So, but... So, yeah, so long story short, we got here in 1990 in January, and it's hard to believe that it's been so long.
Yeah, you look up, and next thing you know, 20 years have passed, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing.
So how often do you get back to Russia?
I've been back quite a few times. I traveled there when I could, mostly for pleasure.
Okay.
But now I go quite a bit to Europe for business, and when I'm close by to St. Petersburg, I tried to go for a few days. So last year we went as a family. We were there for 10 days, you know, and with kids, and it was very nice. But I try to go at least once a year.
Okay. Do you ever get homesick?
It's really odd. I don't get homesick because I think Atlanta is home for me now.
Okay.
But when I'm there, it's very odd feeling. First 2 days, I always feel foreign. I always feel like, you know, really odd. People speak my language, but I don't belong. But then after 2 days, I feel like I never left, you know. So it's I definitely have two homes.
Okay. Well, and so when you grew up, correct me if I'm wrong, you grew up under the communist regime.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, of course, you've seen, or at least, I don't know how old you were when the walls came down, but certainly from then till now, and here you are in a situation where you're doing quite well as a partner of a pretty strong firm.
Right.
So that's got to be pretty interesting, too, when you think back on your transition and the way you progressed through life. Did you ever think it would get to this point?
Not in my wildest dreams. I thought that communists will ever lose power, and actually that happened after we moved to the U.S. It was right after we moved. So we were watching this on TV, and I couldn't believe it, in particular because Moscow and St. Petersburg were very safe places to live in.
Correct.
And when when all of this happened, there was military on the streets, and, I mean, a lot of commotion, a lot of fighting. I just couldn't believe it was happening where I was living before.
Right.
But... I mean, good things came out of that, of course, as you know. But, I don't know what the future is for Russia at this point. With Putin is officially back as a president.
Correct.
Not that he ever left, but now officially he's back. It's hard to tell where it's going to go. I mean, I think there are a lot of good things that happened, definitely, since I left, but... it may take a long time for Russia to become sort of a normal country.
Yeah, right, because it's still caught between generations, right? You've got still have people there that generationally grew up under communism, and
right.
then you have people who are growing up, obviously, and don't know what communism was before.
Right.
And then you got kind of people in the middle, so...
True. And middle class is still developing. I mean, there are a lot of very extremely wealthy, well, shouldn't say a lot, but quite a few, especially in Moscow,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of poor people, mm-hmm. Especially in smaller towns. And then
in
rural areas. And middle class is definitely still very small. And still a lot of corruption, government corruption.
So I've noticed that on the corruption index, it tends to be pretty high, as a couple of other countries as well. But and certainly we won't dwell on that. Now, that's not the purpose of Global Leader Radio.
Yeah,
So what do you miss most about Russia? And I'll also ask you, what do you miss least about Russia?
Right. Well, St. Petersburg, I don't know if you've ever been.
Have not been.
Well,
seen
to,
the pictures.
You have to visit.
Okay.
Picture is definitely nice, but it's better not to come and visit. I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Wow.
And very unique. And I love art. I love music, architecture. I mean, it's the place. If you like all of those things, definitely that's the place. And I mean, I miss my friends. Mm-hmm. I have very close friends that I grew up with, and I still consider them my best friends. We keep in touch. We see each other as much as we can, when we can. So that I miss. And the people, for the most part, very open, very kind, very welcoming. You meet somebody there, and the next day you're already invited to dinner with their whole family. I mean, just, you know, the culture, that's part of the culture. That part I definitely miss. The rest of it, where do I begin? I don't really miss that much.
Oh,
so I can tell you, I cannot be happier that my kids were born in the U.S.
Okay.
I mean, this is definitely, land of opportunity is obviously a cliche, but in addition to that, such a family-oriented country and just the perfect place to be. And for people that were born here and don't realize it, they have to go somewhere else and live there for a little bit.
Wow.
And then come back and say, thank God.
Yes. True words were never spoken.
Yes.
You never know what you have until you
can
go someplace else and appreciate it from afar, right?
Exactly.
Very good. So let's talk a little bit about your transition from Russia to Atlanta. When you first came over, you mentioned in 1990, how much English did you know?
Well, I had some English in school, but
okay.
It's very similar to Americans having Spanish in school.
So. Won't get you very far, but it perhaps can get you a B in school, right? A B
yeah.
or an A in school.
Yeah, I had an A, and I thought I knew much more than I knew. But I can tell you, I had pretty good grammatical knowledge of the grammar, but my vocabulary was next to nothing, and
wow.
the only really texts that we learned were about Communist Party
wow.
and living in the Soviet Union and very limited, pretty useless vocabulary. And I definitely had no practice of speaking and no practice of listening to American English because we had British English.
Okay, yes.
Lessons, which is a little different when your ear has to adjust.
Exactly right. That is exactly right. So what was your first job here in America?
I worked as a cashier. 2 weeks after I came here, I had to get a job.
Okay.
I mean, there were not many other options. And I had my master's in engineering, but it's not like people were lined up to give me a job.
But a job as a cashier, that's high intensity with regard to interactions with people who speak the language other than what you're
I still
with,
say
right?
It was the most challenging job I ever had.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I cried every night. I felt so... I mean, I don't know, for lack of the better word, I felt stupid because I couldn't understand anything. And I mean, I had to learn most of the vegetables and fruits that I've never seen in my life because
wow.
we had pretty limited supply in Russia. It was hard. I mean, I cannot say that I enjoyed it very much, but it was definitely a great learning experience.
Okay. So not being familiar really did get you to really, after you got over the shock of it all, then you were able to sit down and say, okay, I need to focus. How did you go about getting to the conversational English at least?
Well, I tried to speak as much as I could. I also watched a lot of TV.
Okay.
Watched a lot of late night movies, just trying to train my ear a little bit. And I started to understand much faster that I was able to speak because I was very shy to actually say something that wasn't proper, wasn't right.
Okay.
And, you know, I just wasn't, I mean, growing up in the Soviet Union, it's a different culture. You're not so sort of self-promoting, you're a little bit more reserved, mm-hmm. and I was definitely scared to open my mouth.
Interesting. So then, so we fast forward a little bit. Now you are, you've already got your master's degree, right? You have a master's degree.
Well, I do have one in engineering.
Here you went to accounting. Why accounting?
Yeah. Well, I was not that much in love with engineering. I cannot say engineering was my passion. You know, I always wanted to be an engineer. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. But I loved math and numbers, and that's why engineering seemed to be a natural profession for me. But when I came here, I couldn't get a job right away. So I had options. I still would have to go back to college most likely and take some classes in engineering. So I figured, okay, well, maybe if I don't love it that much, maybe I should explore something else. And my uncle said, well, you're good with numbers. What about accounting? And I was like, what is it? I didn't even know what it means necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then I bought Atlanta Journal and Constitution. I opened the paper, and I think accounting took like 50% of the pages.
Wow. Accounting openings.
Yeah, there were so many jobs. Yes. I was like, okay, well, I think it's going to work out.
Well, you've reduced the fear of failure, that's for certain. Right? Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you that from then till now, nothing has really changed a lot. I mean, the numbers are still, they pay well.
Very marketable profession, that's for sure.
Very marketable profession. So you get into, and then you chose to go to school at Georgia State.
Right.
And then you graduated from there. Kind of take us into how did you got to actually a beef?
Well, I was still in school when I always studied at night. I always had full-time jobs. I didn't have an option, unfortunately, to study full-time.
Okay.
So I was still in school when I had an opportunity. Actually, one of our firm's clients knew my husband and told him, why don't I take your wife's resume and give it to Robert Arrighetti. So that's how. And at that time, I was also almost done with school, and I also had an interview with EY, and they offered me a job, but it was 6 months in advance, mm-hmm. and I needed a job right away.
Oh,
so,
okay.
To me, at that time, Big Four, not Big Four, at that time, Big Six, I didn't know any difference,
yeah.
and luckily for me, I took the job that I took.
I love it. I love it. So, but we did neglect one thing that I thought was pretty interesting in your bio. Certainly, you immigrated to America, came into Atlanta in early 90, didn't know much conversational English. Then you look in the newspaper and realize, you know what? This accounting thing looks like it makes sense.
Right.
And then you go and you get into this Masters of Accounting, you go and you take the CPA exam, and lo and behold, who makes the highest grade ever in the CPA exam? Well, the person sitting across from me.
Well, it's not ever, but thank you.
I'm claiming ever, so tell us about that. How does that work? Wow, that's impressive.
I got the highest when I took it that year. I got the highest score in Georgia.
Okay,
and I think it was over 2,000 people that took it. When I took it, it was called Gold Key. It's still called Gold Key. I think they still give it to the highest scores. And then I got the top 100 in the United States, and there were 75,000 people taking it in the U.S.
Wow.
So, let me tell you, I'm glad I got it.
Now that doesn't sound impressive to you, but it sounds pretty impressive to me. Kevin, what are you thinking?
Definitely.
Wow.
But my biggest joy out of all this was that I only had to take it once. You know? I mean, I was really happy about the scores and the awards, but I was more happy that I didn't have to do it again.
Again. Okay, so that was that your original goal? Did you meet your goal?
Yeah.
Your goal was, okay,
I wanted to do
it
once.
So tell us, so now we're going to fast forward, and we've got Kayla here with us, and Kayla's role is to make sure that Alvin pronounces the name of the firm correctly. So what are you responsible for as a partner with Habeth, Arrighetti, and Wynn?
Well, I'm in charge of international services, international practice. So what this means, I'm a tax partner, so but majority of my clients, I would say 99% of my clients, either foreign-owned companies, okay, or U.S. companies with global presence, or also executives of these companies that are transferred between countries.
Okay.
So what it means, really, we have a big, quite large international practice, actually the largest out of firms outside of Big Four in the Southeast.
Okay. Which is impressive.
Yeah, very happy with that. We definitely built it from scratch. I am not the one who started doing international work at H&W. Mitchell Koppelman, who is tax partner and you know has been my mentor for a long time, mm-hmm. he started the practice. And when I started working with him, I realized that this is probably something I want to do based on my background, based on my interests. And I was the first non-US born person that worked at H&W.
Wow.
And now out of 300 people, 300 plus people that we have, 62, I believe, are not US born. And we have 26 languages represented.
Interesting. Interesting.
So it's like United Nations.
And so you certainly do get along with those quite well, right? I mean, so with the 300 employees you have here, and is the headquarters in Atlanta, or you have multiple locations?
We have one office here in Atlanta. We are in the Quinn Building of Hammond Drive.
Which is what, Concourse?
Concourse.
Okay. And then there's another location, I understand, in Florida, too?
Well, there's a small office in Florida, in Sarasota.
Okay. So with regard to what you do, why is it so important today for companies to be international, certainly as the world keeps going global?
Well, I don't think it's a choice anymore. It's more a necessity. And I think just my observation with our clients that are global, I think they've done much better in downside economy.
Okay.
And the reason really is that they can diversify the risk a little bit. If you make your products here and you sell them to 20 different countries, I mean, one of those countries must be doing a little bit better than the rest of them, right? So you diversify the risk. And then at the same time, if you produce in a different country, you can also minimize your costs and potentially, you know, have some significant savings. So I think it's extremely important. I mean, you look at Atlanta and see how international Atlanta is.
Exactly.
It's definitely not where it was when I moved here. I mean, not that I was the first non-US born here in Atlanta, but I think at that time, at the time of my arrival, the international aspect of Atlanta was sort of limited to Beaufort Highway.
And it's still heavily concentrated down in that Beaufort Highway area as well, right?
There's much more to it.
Yeah, but especially with regard to small businesses, because you've got quite a few small businesses down in there as well. So that's been, it's pretty interesting. And, you know, and quite frankly, the first time I've ever been to an international food market was here in Atlanta. And there's one, I think, around the Beaufort Highway
area. That's right.
Certainly one in Decatur.
There are quite a few here.
Yeah, and so one off of Peachtree Industrial as well, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah. So with regard to that, tell us a little bit about some tips or cultural nuances that you can give our listeners for when they're looking to do business internationally.
Well, I mean, every country is obviously specific, and the one thing I can tell you, you have to be prepared. Some people, companies think, oh, you know, we're not large companies, so we don't have the resources necessary to do the investigation, to do the marketing, to hire the professionals, and they go blindly, and they lose much more money than, you know, than company that can you know, that prepare themselves. It's, I mean, I'm not saying spend millions of dollars upfront, but you have to have a plan, right? And if you've never done business internationally, I mean, it would be great if you would have some sort of partner in the country you're trying to enter.
Which makes total sense.
Yeah, yes. I can tell if you go to Russia, I mean, definitely partner. It's not an option. You have to have somebody who knows the ins and outs of the system as well as just how you do business there. But a lot of countries are similar. You really have to learn and understand and be open that it's not exactly going to be the U.S. way.
Exactly. So how many countries to this point have you actually worked in with regard to HAW?
I think currently we have clients in and out of 45 countries.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, definitely a lot of European countries, but we do quite a bit of work in Asia, of course, China, India, and lately Vietnam as well, Japan, definitely Latin America, Brazil being huge. Well, not just a huge country, of course, everybody knows that, but huge in terms of business and, you know, U.S. companies going to Brazil. So, I mean, we have clients in South Africa, we have clients in Israel, I mean, you name it. So it's not limited geographically.
Okay.
we've done quite a bit of work, all over the globe.
Okay. So if you would, if we would ask you, just kind of put you on the spot just a little bit and say, which one of those countries are the ones that you've kind of named at a high level, perhaps is perhaps the easiest to do business with that you've noticed?
Well, I think Western European countries,
okay,
probably the easiest just because culture is similar. I mean, of course, it's easy to do business in countries where they speak very good English.
That's right.
So I would think England would be one of them,
that's
right?
That's right. The UK is a great partner.
Yeah, yeah. But Canada, definitely, well, because of so many similarities, mm-hmm, obviously, with the U.S.,
and the proximity is so close.
Proximity, too. Absolutely. So I would say definitely the easiest would be Western European countries and Canada. But then, of course, depending on your business, you may want to look at countries outside of those countries.
Correct. Correct. Makes sense. So as we switch gears and talk a little bit more about leadership from that perspective, what are the top two characteristics or qualities of a good leader, in your opinion?
Well, I think first you have to really enjoy what you do, because
okay,
you cannot lead unless you like what you do, right?
Okay.
In my opinion. And second, and I mean not necessarily second, maybe second first,
okay,
right? is that you really have to appreciate people and understand that it's a very lonely ride if people, if you don't have a team, right?
Right.
And you have to appreciate what they do, and you have to understand that everybody brings different qualities, and not everybody is the same. And especially doing business in a global environment, you really have to understand that everybody's a little different. But
yes,
at the same time, we all have this similar values, right?
Right, right. Or should, especially if they're working in your firm and your firm has a set of values and they hire
That's
to
right.
those values, right?
Right.
So, yes, yeah, so I greatly appreciate that. At our executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, we are one of the few programs that actually is team-based. And so what happens is we bring people on from a variety of different industries and they come into the program, and then we put them on intact domestic teams, and you don't get to choose the team that you're on, but you're with that team throughout the duration of the 5 semesters in the program.
Hmm.
And so when we teach teaming, we actually do take it on the road from a virtual perspective, because in the 4th semester, global commerce semester, we visit a foreign country,
okay,
and then we partner with an executive MBA program there, and together we start with virtual teaming. We understand the project we're going to be working on while we're there for 10 days, and then we come back to America, and then the next semester they come here, and then they deliver with our domestic team, they deliver the project. So it's a pretty interesting way to look at what you just talked about. You know, you've got to be able to understand the culture. You got to understand
right.
how to do business, and you've got to understand who these people are and how they look at life, how they approach it, because it's a 7-hour time difference. The country actually is Romania. We've worked with Acebus in the past. And Acebus is in Bucharest.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've spent quite a bit of time there in the mountains of Sinaia. And so our good friends have always treated us well. So, and to your point, they have to know English. And so
yeah.
they have to speak English when they're in the program.
Sure,
yeah.
sure. Well, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
That makes it a little easier, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So when you think back to your leadership style, who have you admired that has impacted your leadership style?
Well, I, you know, most of my professional career I have been with the same firm.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I look at H&W, Jimmy Arrighetti, who is one of the founders, he was definitely, he made a huge impact on me. I mean, he actually, he taught at Georgia State a little bit.
Okay.
And I think he taught maybe real estate tax at some point. And he was a lawyer and a CPA, and he was a family man with four children, and he just had a huge appreciation for people and interest in people. And I always admired that, and I always thought, how can you be so accomplished in life and so educated, but at the same time take so much interest in employees and their lives? And I mean, and I always thought that that's why, that's at least part of the reason why he was so successful, because employees were drawn to him, and they wanted to spend time with him. It wasn't just professional relationship. Here's the tax return, go ahead and prepare it. But
right.
much more than that. So definitely, he made a big impact on me. I mean, outside of him, I mean, Mitchell Koppelman, that I work with and, I mean, worked with. I mean, he, like I said, he started international practice, and I was with him. I just very much enjoyed his entrepreneurial skills and spirit, because when he started this sort of practice, this was absolutely new, and we were
okay.
not a huge firm by any stretch of imagination, and this was more like a dream.
Okay.
And look where we are now. So, and then outside of the firm, I mean, I have a lot of clients that sometimes I look up to, even that, of course, they look up to me for tax advice
right.
and very often business advice, but I definitely admire some of their leadership styles.
Okay.
And I've done work with some very successful people. A lot of them are women, I mean, but a lot of them are men. I mean, women sometimes a little bit more interesting for me, just because I always look for that balance in life.
Yes.
And I am always trying to see what other women that have families and kids are doing, and how
and a
they
career.
Can
and a career yeah.
and a career, because I mean it's obviously there is a lot to learn in that department.
Yes.
Everybody is looking for that balance and what it means, really. But
I'm sure
you probably know what I'm talking about.
Yes, well put. You know, we have with this being the 44th show, we've had several guests on that we've asked the same question to that you've actually answered. You know, what do you think about this whole balance equation, trying to manage, you know, a career, you know, in the family aspects, especially from a maternal perspective?
Right.
And it certainly isn't easy. So knowing the background you have, which is a unique background, obviously, and which is where we want to get a perspective from your thoughts and your and kind of your family background as well, to say how does that all mesh and how does it work out now that you're here in America and you're doing some of the same things and trying to assimilate. And certainly there's got to be some models in your head that are a little different than the models you see today.
Right. Well, I can tell you, growing up in Russia, I never thought I was going to be a career woman, let's put it this way. Even that I always did really well in school, it was part of the culture. You have to really study hard and get good grades. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't know why necessarily, but what can you do with those grades in Soviet Union, right?
Where are we going with this, right?
But that was sort of in my blood. But I never really pictured myself running a big practice and being a partner in a firm. And I mean, it wasn't necessarily my goal when I was a child.
Right.
It wasn't even my goal when I got here. I knew I wanted to do well. I wanted to, you know, obviously get the most out of my move in terms of success and professional success. But I never thought I would get this far.
Right.
But as far as the balance goes, I mean, I have two children. I have, they're both U.S. born. My husband is Russian, so my kids, Sasha and Misha. Mm-hmm. My daughter is 16. My son is 12. So they definitely require a lot of attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, it's not easy, but I have to set my priorities, and I cannot say it's always like, okay, I'm going to make every single swim meet and every single volleyball game. And like, but some people make those choices. They say, absolutely, this is always first.
Yes.
I mean, for me, I'm not going to say it's second, but I do what I can and when I can. If I have to be out of town and it's absolute must because I have to be out of town for a client during my, you know, kids' sporting events, I mean, I go out of town, right? And then I catch up as much as I can later. Maybe my husband take a video.
There you go.
Things like that. So we try to balance as much as we can. And yeah, I mean, of course, the older they get, the more I realize that I want to be with them even more and more.
Exactly.
Just because I know they will be going to college soon.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, as the father of three daughters, I can tell you, they don't stay young forever.
that's right.
They certainly don't. And certainly from the time that we first met earlier today, I know we've kind of exchanged emails, et cetera, and Kayla has helped to facilitate our conversations as well. But I've been impressed with your humility. And so based on your humility, you know, your humble beginnings and now where you are today, a partner with a strong firm, what do you see as a couple of things that really have helped you to get where you are today?
Well, one thing, and not everybody will have the same thing going for them, because one thing is that I had to overcome a lot of difficulties. I came from a foreign country, right? Mm-hmm. So in my head, I had to justify to myself, you know, that it was a good move. Even that it was apparent to me from the beginning, that definitely in many different ways, it was a good move.
But
I left a lot behind.
Yeah.
I cannot say I was just extremely unhappy. Of course, economically, Russia was far, far behind, will always be probably behind. Being Jewish wasn't the greatest thing there, but it was my country. I was born there. I left my family there. I left my friends there. So I think I maybe had to work a little bit harder than most of the people that are born here to basically to say, okay, there's definitely a reason behind my move, in addition to what I just described. So I think that one thing that helped me tremendously. But other than that, I can tell you, when I moved here, my uncle and my aunt, they told me, they said, listen, this is the best country. It is the best country in the world. They've been here for 10 years. They're still in the U.S. They live in San Diego. They moved.
But great place too.
Yeah,
great,
I know. I love to visit there. I'm glad they moved there and not to some, you know, not such a desirable location.
Exactly right. San Diego. Wow.
But they told me, they said, you have all the tools. Mm-hmm. You're young, you're educated, you're smart, you know, you don't have kids yet. Mm-hmm. Go for it. You can do it. And they said you can do really, really well here. And I just didn't know how well, but they told me this is the country where you can, you know, overcome any troubles. And I believe them. And I think I kind of, every time it was very difficult for me, I had very many difficult moments.
Understood.
I mean, just, you know, doubting myself and doubting the whole situation and, you know, missing my parents that were in Russia, now they're here. And I kept reminding myself, you know, looking at people that are very successful, I would always ask myself, so what? You know, I mean, why not me then, right?
That's right.
What do they have that I don't
have?
That
you don't have.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, it helps you, you know, this kind of thoughts put you in a different sort of perspective.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, and I cannot imagine what it's like to leave your family and come to another country and really have perhaps just a few relatives to work with. But above and beyond that, everything is new.
Right.
Every day is different.
Right.
I mean, you have very little perspective, and then as you move along, that does provide you with a few advantages, because there's nothing on the back end that you say, well, you know, I failed at this a few years ago because it just started yesterday, right?
Right.
And then certainly the disadvantages. But you looked really more at the glass half full than the glass half empty.
Yeah, and like I said, I knew this was a land of opportunities, mm-hmm. right? And I was very much encouraged by my relatives and all the people that I met here. They were very supportive. I never felt that I had any obstacles because I'm foreign. Mm-hmm. But I know some people, like some of my classmates who immigrated to some European countries, mm-hmm. they still feel foreign there after wow. living there for so long. Because other countries are not necessarily as accepting as the United States, obviously. Mm.
Which is a huge melting pot in and huge. Of itself.
But I never felt that, oh, you cannot do this because you have an accent.
Yes, right.
Although, you know, people tell me I have an accent. I'm not sure. Do I?
Well, they tell me I have an accent as well, and I know I do. I love it. So let's switch gears just slightly and talk a little bit about your evolution as a leader. Because here you've moved from an individual who came into America, had to understand the language. Then you made a decision, a few great decisions, and you've stuck behind those decisions 100% and said, okay, I'm going to hang my hat in the finance accounting area. Right. And then you blow out the score there on the CPA exam, and then you go on to work with HAW. And then you start working and giving back. So there's the community aspects of what you do.
Sure,
tell
sure.
us a little bit about your community involvement, first of all, and mm-hmm. then we'll talk about why you chose to do those certain things.
Right. Well, I'm on the board of Georgia Council of International Visitors. And the reason I decided to get involved is, again, because I came from another country, and the Council for International Visitors facilitates delegations from various countries that are coming to Atlanta and Georgia, and not just Atlanta and Georgia, but Georgia Council obviously works with delegations that come here. And it's not necessarily business delegations. Mm-hmm. It could be cultural leaders, could be religious leaders from, you know, United Arab Emirates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, many different organizations. And I just feel passionate about Atlanta being international and becoming even more international, because obviously I've been here for a long time, and selfishly I like it. I like that it's becoming so global, right?
Yes, yes.
So I got involved with that organization, and I chaired the Consulable, which I don't know if you know, I cannot remember the exact number, but I think there are over 65 consulates here in Atlanta.
Yes.
And some of them are real consulates, and some of them are honorary. Right. Mm-hmm. So this Consulable, it's a signature event every year. It happens. This year it was at the World of Coke, and I was a chair, and honorary chair was the mayor, Kasim Reed. Mm-hmm. So it's a fun event, but it also shows to the whole community how international we are here. So that's why I'm involved with that organization, and I also did. I can tell you one of my biggest sort of leadership experiences was going through Leadership Atlanta program.
Yes.
That was amazing, and I can tell the listeners, if you ever have a chance to be to apply and to be accepted, because it's an honor to be accepted, it's very competitive.
Yes,
this is an amazing program, and for younger people, because Leadership Atlanta, even that, I don't believe they have sort of an age limit. You cannot be this young, you know? But you have to be pretty accomplished to be able to participate. But for younger crowd, there is a Lead Atlanta.
Interesting.
Which I strongly recommend. It's one of hopefully takeaways. You know, Google Lead Atlanta and see if you qualify to apply and to be accepted. But both programs are amazing, and I can tell you, I was sort of ignorant a little bit of what's going on here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not because I don't care, but because I guess luckily for me, I didn't come across necessarily huge problems, and I always looked at America through sort of pink or purple glasses, right? But this program opened up, definitely opened my eyes on many, many different issues here in Atlanta. And you know, the people that I met there, there was a class of 77.
Wow.
And
some great connections in there, too.
Amazing
right?
connections. Okay. But people that I met there, they're all great leaders. I mean, they're different, too, because it's not the people that I would normally meet through networking.
Okay.
But, you know, there were some doctors, there were some. Well, of course, there were lawyers, which you know, I would or bankers, but there were Coca-Cola
educators.
We had we had a headmaster of Atlanta International School, Kevin Glass, who I'm good friends with now. Mm-hmm. We had pastor. Mm-hmm. We had people.
Technology leaders.
Leaders in, from different angles and organizations that I would never meet otherwise.
Okay.
And president of Weather Channel, well, she was promoted to president just recently.
Interesting.
President of global sales for UPS.
Mm.
Again, she was promoted just recently. So my class.
Movers and shakers, huh?
Absolutely.
And we had somebody on a few weeks ago, right, Kevin? And they said that they were the only class that really matters. Wasn't it Laura Hart that told
it
us that last
indeed.
Week? Leadership Cobb, if I'm not mistaken, is what she went through. And she said the only class that really matters.
In Leadership Atlanta, we would say the best class ever.
The best class ever. So some pretty interesting organizations and some things that you've done from that perspective. So why did you choose those particular groups and organizations to get involved in? I think you kind of gave us a little insight there as well. So if we switch gears to some of the publications, because you do a little bit of writing as well, is that something that's required for what you normally do for a living, your livelihood, or is that kind of helps establish you as a thought leader in your area, or is that something you just are passionate about doing as well?
Well, it's not required, you know, with what I do, but it's definitely helpful. Well, in business development, first of all, because obviously clients don't grow on trees.
I love it.
We have to develop them, but. I mean, I like to write, and normally when we write articles, we try to also engage younger staff, and we co-author with younger people in the group.
Oh, really?
So we try to give them that experience early on, and sometimes we, you know, suggest topics. I mean, let's say there's a new tax law, you know, that is very important for our clients. We will write about that, or maybe there are some new regulations, or maybe just business, you know, idea, something like that. And of course, the most difficult thing is to write about technical issues, but not in a technical way.
Correct. Right? For the layperson to be able to understand.
Exactly.
That, right?
Okay. Exactly. But we always try to engage younger staff, so they get that experience early on.
So is the tax profession, is it heavily weighted toward middle-aged people?
What are you implying here?
I love it. So making sure that I understand just, and our listeners understand just how, in my mind, important you are and how influential you are, you were, again, selected as one of the three finalists for the International Women of the Year, Women of Influence Awards of the Year, in the service providing businesses for global exec women. So tell us a little bit about how that happens and what is Global Exec Women?
Well, Global Exec Women is an organization that consists of executive level women doing business globally.
Okay.
And I was one of the founding board members. Virginia Bradley is a CEO and a founder.
Okay.
And I've been involved, it was before I even made partner, so it's been years since started my involvement. But at some point, they've done quite a few award ceremonies, and at some point they felt that they wanted to make me finalist.
I love it.
Based on, I guess, what I've done for not for them necessarily, but in international community.
Okay, So as we start to get toward the end of our conversation today, and as I always joke and tell our the folks that are sitting with us, is that it's just a great conversation between two people with a few million people listening in. Tell us a little bit about mentorship and how that has helped you to really get where you are today. You talked about the leadership styles of some folks that you really admire, but their ability to actually work with you and help you to understand the business, the nuances of the business, and how to connect the dots on business itself. Certainly you can learn accounting and tax, et cetera, but it takes perhaps a little bit longer and maybe even a little bit more one-on-one work and working with someone one-on-one to understand right. the nuances of leadership.
Yeah, we do have a formal mentoring program at H&W. Okay. And my mentor has been and still is Robert Araghetti. He is the son of the founder of the firm, and he's an amazing person and very wise businessman and also family man. So I, throughout the years, every time I would have an issue, let's say, I would come to him, and even, you know, when I wanted to leave the firm on a few occasions, mm-hmm. and, you know, I was very open with him, and it was good to have somebody who gave me objective opinion, even that he was probably a little biased, right. you know, in keeping me, but so I'm lucky, definitely, to have him. But I would say another person that influenced me in a big way is my mother.
Okay.
And she's not necessarily a career woman, but she's an engineer, and she is a very smart, very educated woman. And she is, you know, she told me, she said, "Listen, you have to achieve in this life what I wasn't able to achieve, because most of my professional life was in Soviet Union, and mm-hmm. you're here." And she gave me a lot of encouragement and a lot of people skills and just a lot of great things whatever I inherited from her.
And I'm sure intuition is part of that too, right?
Absolutely. But I also enjoy mentoring people. So I have a few mentees at work, and I actually have sort of informal mentees outside of work. And I try to give back, and at least based on my experience, I don't know if all of my sort of advices and ideas are the greatest, mm-hmm. but hopefully they will get something out of it and achieve successes and, I mean, achieve happiness at work too. It's very
right.
important to be happy in your career.
Right.
In my opinion, you can be smart, you can be interesting, you can be educated. If you're not happy at work, you're not going to be successful.
Because you spend so much time there too.
Exactly.
A lot of your mental energy goes into that
sometimes,
as well.
Sometimes much more time than you want to spend there,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. So when you think through what you do and some of the topics you talk about with your mentees, mm-hmm. is there seem to be maybe a couple of common threads between those things that they typically need a little help with?
Well, I can tell you, younger generation, Kayla would understand that. they're a little different. I mean, they're definitely different. They have different sort of goals in life. Mm-hmm. Balance is much more important nowadays. I mean, mm-hmm. we talked about balance, and it's important for me as well. But for younger people, even more so. So we have to take that into consideration. But of course, the part of the mentoring is also to explain to the younger folks that, you know, if their bosses are a little older, they may have their own ways, right?
Right.
So you have to sort of find the balance between them too. You cannot say every night, "Oh, by the way, I cannot make this meeting because I have 5 o'clock aerobics class," you know, and I cannot do anything about it, right? I'm not saying give up all of your fun stuff, but be somewhat flexible. Yeah. Be understanding of generational matters as well.
That's a great takeaway. Yeah, that's a great takeaway. So certainly being flexible, certainly understanding the generational differences is what you help them to kind of get. What does Yelena Ipova do to ensure she continues to grow and develop as a leader?
I think the most important thing for me is, well, I continue developing people. So I think I told you that you have to have a strong team, right? Mm-hmm. in order for you to be successful in our business, of course, manage a lot of business, be successful, be able to spend time with your clients and be more strategic thinker, right? You have to have a strong team working with you. So I think I cannot say enough how important it is to really continue developing people, making sure people see that H&W in our case is their place, is the place for their career, and mm-hmm. this is the place where they want to be for a long, long time. But what do I do sort of for myself? I hate to disappoint you. I'm not very big on leadership books necessarily. Okay. I know some people really live and breathe that. And I know a lot of my partners have whole library of different leadership books. I love to read, and mm-hmm. I read a lot in Russian and English. More for pleasure.
Okay.
But as far as the books that are influencing me, I like to read biographies of influential women.
Okay.
And not necessarily country leaders. So maybe the latest one I read was about Maya Plisetska, who is a very famous ballerina, ballet dancer.
And Russia is very famous for their ballet, right?
Very. And okay. Russia is the best, and she is the best of Russia.
Wow, yeah.
Those kind of books, and interesting for me because she achieved so much in life and not necessarily in accounting or business, and definitely different career. But at the same time, I always find some tips for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always interesting to see how other people overcome difficulties.
Great point. Yeah, because accounting and business is what you do, but it's not who you are.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, okay. So what do you do to recharge the batteries and keep you sharp, innovative, cutting edge? Is it a lot of what we already talked about, or do you go parasailing? Or are you scuba diving?
Jump from airplanes.
I
spend time with my children as much as I can, and I love to travel for fun. I mean, I travel more for business than for fun, but mm-hmm. I've taken some really nice trips in the last few years. So last year we went, my husband and I, with friends, and we were sailing in Greece for 9 days.
Wow.
So that was very recharging, I have to say.
So did you combine that with business so that you could talk about the euro there as well, or no?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I I was hoping that I will have no service on my iPhone, but I did have service. But I didn't even check my emails every day, which is unusual for me.
Mm.
But
a great vacation.
It was an awesome vacation. But I love music. I play piano.
Wow.
Actually, before all of this career choices, I thought I was going to be a classical pianist.
Mm.
So that's a hobby.
We love it. We love it. So now we get to the final question of our time together, and we'll make both the audio and the video available to our on our blog post when you answer this question for us. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Well, as I said, I don't have I cannot really recommend necessarily a leadership book because there are a lot of great books there. It's mm-hmm. just for me, probably not not as helpful as for other people.
If it's not a book, is there another perhaps resource when you think through? What has really helped you in terms of your leadership? Because I know personal interaction mm-hmm. has been a big thing for you, and the ability to use mentors and chat with them about what you need.
Well, like I said, Leadership Atlanta, for sure.
Yeah.
Huge. But in terms of other resources, the one thing I read religiously, it's not a book, it's Global Atlanta.
Ah.
Are you familiar with that?
I'm not as familiar with that as I will be.
Okay, so this is my big plug for Global Atlanta, www.globalatlanta.com.
Okay.
Phil Bolton is the guy who actually founded it. Now it's a website, but it used to be fax. It was called Global Fax.
Okay.
And it was faxed to a lot of globally minded people, let's put it this way. But now it's a website and it's a publication. It's free. The best part, or not the best part, but a good part about it. It's free. You sign up and there's a ton of information on that website about all the international events that are happening
in Atlanta.
Companies that are coming here, companies that are going global, different people, different leaders, very interesting stories. I mean, very, for me, very inspiring. Mm. And I strongly recommend that. They actually, now at our firm, it's a must read.
Wow. So do they refresh that content on a monthly basis, weekly basis, perhaps?
More often, sometimes daily.
Wow.
Daily. And I strongly recommend it. A lot of information, and especially if you want to go network a little bit.
Okay.
And international environment, all the international events are posted there. They have international calendar.
You have a certain section of that site that really draws you every time? Or you just
But that website, if you sign up, there is a newsletter. So it goes out sometimes once a week, sometimes twice a week.
Okay.
There is a global flash of something very important is going on. So it's a great resource.
Great. Thank you. So, Yelena, on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a lot from you and certainly appreciate you for accepting the invitation to join us today. Realize that you actually were out of town down in Miami, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yesterday,
and then flew in simply for this conversation.
Absolutely.
And we couldn't be more happy that you did. And I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future if that can work with your schedule. Is that a deal?
Yeah, it's a deal. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. And with that in mind, can you tell us how our learning community can contact you by email address and or by phone?
Sure. Well, my phone number is 404-898-7431. It's my direct dial at work, and my email address is Yelena, yelena.ipova@hawcpa.com.
Well, perfect. And as a special thank you, I have a copy of Business Acumen 2, which is insights from the faculty and friends of the Coles College of Business. And there's several great short stories in there, as well as some great insights from a business perspective. And it probably won't usurp what you're doing with the other newsletter and news and websites you told me about, but there's certainly a great read. There's lots of great reads in there.
This may become my favorite leadership book.
There you go. We love that. And with that smile, we bring today's edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. And we invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. And for those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the eMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect to us and sign up for an information session. And we have the next information session will be on July the 27th. That's two Saturdays from now. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with passionate people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.